And we are on. Hello, I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. And here we are, almost at mid-September already. Absolutely incredible as far as I can fathom here how fast September is going. And we've already got 1 week of football down in high school and a couple of weeks overall for the fall sports scene. Tim and I are going to talk about that. We're going to talk with Jeff Hutton, the Beverly High School football coach, later on. Gary Larrabee will be stepping in, bring us up to date on all things golf. And then golf. And then hopefully we'll be able to get a hold of Mike Grenier, another sports writer, who will talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame, and the enshrinement of Bill Russell again, along with Paul Pierce. But anyway, let's bring in Tim Kearns. Tim, how you doing?
Well, Rick, you know my situation, so it's...
I do. I just don't know if you wanted to go public with it, so, you know.
Well, you know, not so much if you can't hide it. I got diagnosed with COVID on Saturday morning after receiving word Friday night from a friend that he and another buddy had tested positive for COVID earlier in the week. So I went the next morning and got tested and it came back positive. But it's interesting, my wife and anybody that I've been in contact with throughout the week, they all came back negative. So it's like, why me? You know, I'm having a Nancy Kerrigan moment. But, I had both shots early on, and thank God for that. But I also have the four comorbidities, which probably puts me at a greater risk than a lot of other people. So if you're out there and you've got some of the comorbidities, or even if you don't, get your butt to the doctor and get vaccinated. Because, you know, it's a handful. I've been tired, achy. I had a headache. I had several other symptoms. I took two naps today. So, you've got to take care of yourself, drink plenty of water, and, if you feel tired, lay down.
Yeah.
That's my situation, and I'm quarantined until next Monday.
Well, I think this is the classical case of breakthrough, and as we were talking about before we got on, I saw my personal care physician today, and she is alarmed at the number of COVID cases that she's treating now, and they're not breakthrough cases. They are people who have not been vaccinated, and she said that she has had one breakthrough, and that was a very mild case, one patient so far. But
mine is not major, but I'm tired, I'm achy, I don't have the severe case.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show you that even if you do have it, you can have it sneak up on you.
Well, that was the whole idea of getting the vaccine in the first place. It was an emergency vaccine to save lives. And much like the flu shot, I mean, people get flu with the flu shot, but it does protect you to some extent. So we're happy about that. Tim, I want to get your opinion on this, on the Patriots, if we have time here. But I want to start with high school first, because it was such an amazing opening weekend for high school football around here, and the other sports are rolling along too. We talked with the Salem News sports writer Bill Newell does every Tuesday morning. They'll have their podcast on tomorrow morning, and the Salem News sports writers plus Nick Kukuru of the Gloucester Times will be bringing everybody up to speed on all sports. But we're going to talk mostly football here tonight. And the Northeastern Conference, with some, I continue to call it creative scheduling, came away with some really big wins this weekend, including, as you're familiar, Beverly's big win over Haverhill, Danvers with a big win over Tewksbury, and it just kind of goes on and on. St. John's Prep pulling out a thriller in the last minute of play. Peabody taking it to Revere. Peabody seems to continue their rise. Hamilton Wenham came on into the conference. Jim Pugh, and he beat Gloucester on Friday evening. But some really amazing football for the opening weekend.
Yeah, you continue to do that. That list, Rick, and, St. Mary's Lynn, though, it's local. They had a big win against Spelman. Linfield wiped out Saugus, Pentucket over Austin Prep. Titan over Randolph, Matco over Newburyport, Manchester Essex over Ipswich, and it was a resounding weekend of success for local teams, and obviously all really itching to get back out on the gridiron and excited by that possibility, and took it to their opponents in surprising fashion. I think for a lot of people sitting in the stands thinking, okay, what are we going to look like, you know, not having really played? Yeah, we had a kind of a crazy season last year, a few games, but what are we going to do now? And, you know, they all come out and put the pedal to the metal.
Well, I'll tell you, here on MSO News Sports, we will be talking. I did talk with Danvers High School football coach Ryan Nolan earlier. We'll have that interview up either tonight or tomorrow, and talking about his team's solid win. It was close for a while in the second half, but the Falcons pulled away. And, of course, he has an exceptional assistant coach. In fact, he's calling it co-coaching with Kevin Fassett of Ipswich, formerly of Ipswich, Kevin running the offense. And also, we want to congratulate Kevin Fassett on his new role in the wintertime of being the Danvers High School varsity hockey coach. So there's that aspect. They installed sort of a new offense, as did Jeff Hutton over in Beverly, and both teams, both Danvers and Beverly, with big scores. So, again, stay tuned. We'll be checking in with Ryan Nolan either tonight or tomorrow. Also have an interview tomorrow with Jamie Caponigro. And do you know Jamie at all, Coach?
If his dad is Joe, I know his dad.
Well, yeah, Joe's her dad. And Jamie was a standout basketball player and soccer player on the girls' teams at Swampscott High School. And she's continued that for 4 years at Endicott. They got an exemption because they couldn't play last year. So she's a graduate student now at Endicott, leading scorer returning from 2019. And she's playing, they are playing right now. I believe they're 1-0-1. Got a great interview with Jamie Caponigro coming up tomorrow as well. What an outstanding athlete and scholar as well.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, Joe's a class act. He coached over at from Swanskin, and he's participated in the North Shore semi-pro league for a number of years. He was also the head varsity baseball coach at Lynn English.
Yeah,
for quite a year. So,
yeah, we talked to him quite a bit, and he's. And Jamie was saying her mom is a teacher, so between the two of them playing sports and having a teacher in the building and a coach in the building, she had to keep it on the straight and narrow in high school.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And she's continued to do that in college on her own. So a interesting interview. I hope you'll check that out tomorrow. And again, tomorrow the Sports Writers podcast with Bill Newell hosting will be posted here on MSO probably early in the morning, not too early, but maybe around 8-ish in the morning. And Bill will be talking with a whole bunch of writers, including Phil Stacey, the executive sports editor of the Salem News, the assistant sports editor of the News, Matt Williams. He'll be talking with Nick Giannino and Nick Kukuru, sports editor of the Gloucester Times. They're going to talk a lot of football, but they're going to talk all other sports as well. And you're not going to find a more informative sports roundtable about high school sports anywhere on the North Shore than that podcast with the Salem News sports writers plus the Gloucester sports editor.
Well, I hope that Phil mentions how dapper that Phil Stacey looked in his new figure that he is sporting out there along the sidelines.
Yeah, well, you know, good health is a major topic right now. So, yeah, congratulations to Phil. I wonder, you know, if taking weight off in the proper manner, which he's done, if he's still going to be wearing shorts this winter, you know, in the rinks and stuff like that. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Knowing Phil, he's not about to break tradition. He's sporting the shorts now, and he'll be wearing them 3 or 4 months from now.
Speaking of wearing shorts, I saw Tom Walsh over the weekend. Tom is a lovely bride and two of their beautiful granddaughters at the Fall Music Festival in Gloucester on Saturday. And Tom was wearing shorts, former assistant football coach and longtime chemistry teacher at Gloucester High School. No, I'm sorry. Was it biology? Yeah. AP Biology. He looks great, and he listens to our podcast from time to time. So, Tom, if you're listening, man, great to see you the other day. Your family is beautiful. All right, we're going to take our first...
It just goes to show that nature can sneak up on you, and, you know, and despite Tom's dashing good looks, you know, God bless the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah, amen to that. We have beautiful. I have beautiful grandchildren too, and I had nothing to do with them, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm not even related to them, and maybe that's why they are beautiful. Appreciate it, I'll tell you, and I love them so dearly. In fact, my oldest granddaughter is in the sixth grade now at Rockport High School, and she's just starting to play field hockey. They've got a field hockey game coming up on Wednesday, and we're going to go see them play at Linfield next week. So looking forward to that. All right, enough about family stuff. Let's take a break. Come back, and if I can figure out how to do this, we'll talk with Jeff Hutton, the Beverly High School football coach. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
I'm having a little trouble with my phones here, so I'm trying to call Tim back.
Hello.
All right, I got you back. I'm having trouble with the phone. It's not, well, obviously it's user error, and you're not here to help me fix it. All right, so I don't know why that's not working. Are you pretty sure I pressed this one? You know what? Let me see. What do I have here? I'm going to go check something on Google. So go ahead and talk, Tim. What about Patriots?
Well, it was definitely a disappointing end to Mac Jones's career as the Patriots quarterback. But it was clearly evident throughout the course of the game why Bill Belichick decided to keep him and dump Kim. The kid was smooth, cool, calm, collected, except for that. First pass, which nobody knows what the hell he was doing, when he turned around and threw it into the ground for a fumble. But he came back like a storm, you know, like a tornado went, threw the ball all over the field, threw it accurately, threw it with zip, laid it in a couple of times when he needed to, was in command of the offense, never had a deer in the headlight look at all throughout the game. No, the kid is the real deal.
All right, I agree with you, and we can talk about this more. I think I have it figured out. So, all right, interrupting that, I'll continue that interview. It's going to be posted tomorrow. Thanks to Ryan Nolan of Danvers High School for that. We're going to bring in Jeff Hutton now, the Beverly High School basketball, Beverly High School football coach. And, Coach, welcome back. That first win under your belt, man, pretty solid victory.
Yeah, Havel's a tough team. You know, they're Their numbers are a little down, and they're pretty young, but they're still tough. It's still a Haverhill tough team, and they forced us to play the whole game. So anytime you can beat a Division I team, no matter what, is a good thing.
All right. Tell me about, I don't know if you have game plans in high school, but tell me about your preparation, new coaching staff and so on, trying to get your way of playing offense. What were some of the things you were pleased with about how your team performed?
Well, I think we're in the ballpark, if you want to say. You know, we run the wing T, which is a very detail-oriented offense, you know, very precise movements, and it takes time to develop, and we've really only had a couple weeks here. But, you know, like I talked to Phil Stacey after the game, he was like, oh, you guys look great today. I was like, well, you know, Phil, to the naked eye, yeah. And says, but to the coach's eye, I would give us about a 60 as far as, like, execution on offense. I says, but we scored 33 points, and that gave us a 60, so I kind of like where we're at and where we could be heading.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, tell me about some of the kids who might some of the plays or some of the things that might have gotten some passing marks for you because, you know, again, to the fan's eye, man, that is a real solid win. And overall, good performances on offense and defense. You had to be some – I know you got to work on stuff, Coach. I get that. But what are a couple of things that you were most pleased with?
I just think our team pursuit on defense. You know, we preach that when we're watching film, when we're watching the guys on defense, we want to see nine or more guys in the screen, you know, like – I want to be able to count nine blank helmets around the other team's ball carrier. And if you're doing that consistently, you get a chance to be a really, really good defense. So I was really proud of that. We had all out pursuit on that side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think we held them to under 70 total yards of offense.
Wow.
I think, you know, offensively, we got new guys playing all over the place. We got a quarterback who's had no varsity experience, and he completed over 60% of his passes and threw his first varsity touchdown. We had two guards who were the most important people in the offense for the wing team, both playing brand new positions. One was a center last year, the other was a fullback. So, and the fact that we were able to rush for like 230 some yards was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I talked with Coach Nolan over at Danvers, and he had a player that he had to move also from one position to another after you know, quite a while playing that. And it's a real credit to the kids when they can do that. Because, you know, kids, parents, sometimes you have your heart set on playing one position, but then coach comes in and said, hey, what's best for the team? And the kids are able to learn that.
Oh, when you've got kids that are willing to buy in, and for me, it was the first week I met the kids after watching game film. I was like, look, we don't have a fullback per se in our offense, but fullbacks typically are the best guards in this offense. And he was like, coach, I'll do whatever it takes to win.
Ah, cool. All right. Switching gears now, Jeff, and I apologize for all my technical mistakes here. Poor Tim is supposed to be talking with you at the moment. I can't get him in this conference call. All my fault.
He never stops talking when he gets going.
Well, that's okay. True. But I'm, you know, I'm certainly not in mid-season form, I'll tell you. let's switch our attention to North Andover. That's Coach E.J. Perry's team, isn't it?
No, it's,
Oh, that's Andover. That's right. Andover's his team.
John Kaczynski is the head coach in North Andover.
All right. But, again, upcountry, man, always a tough team. What do you know about those guys? In fact, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with the neighborhood.
Yeah, I've been a health and phys ed teacher at North Andover High School for the last 14 years. So I know just about every kid on the team.
does that give you an advantage?
I don't know. I think we have to perform well because they're already giving it to me. So
okay.
It's already starting.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's got to be kind of delicate.
But it's good that I have a relationship with some of the kids, so it's a good friendly ribbing back and forth.
Absolutely. What do you know about Andover? What do you expect from them offensively and defensively?
Well, they got a great quarterback. He's a senior. He's shown very well in a lot of summer showcases. He's in that, like, QB2 or elite QB group or whatever that summer thing is, the travel over the place. He threw for a ton of yards in the game, had three touchdown passes. He's dangerous. He's got quick release. He can read the defense fast. And, you know, they got some great receivers over there. They're all quick. They're the type of guys that if you let them get a step on you, they can go for a 5-yard hit into a 60-yard touchdown, you know?
Well, it sounds like it's going to be another challenge for you guys. What that game is on Saturday or Friday?
Friday night up there at 7 o'clock.
Friday night at 7 o'clock. All right. You know we're going to be bugging you later on for Panther preview during the week. But, Jeff, thank you so much, as always, and congratulations on your first win as the head man over at Beverly.
Oh, thank you so much, Rick.
Take care, Jeff.
You too.
All right. That's Jeff Hutton, who is the Beverly High School football coach. Now I'm going to take a break and bring Gary Larrabee in and Tim Kearns in, if all goes well. Wish me luck, because I need it, man, the way things are going tonight. But that's my fault. We'll get it fixed. We'll get it fixed. All right, so this is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. Tim Kearns standing by. Gary Larrabee will be up next.
Hi, Timmy.
Who do we have?
All right. Kearns, you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Yep. All right. Everybody's there. Okay. Fine. It's Gary, total user error tonight all the way around, man. I've just flubbed everything. But anyway, we're happy to have you here. It's there's a little touch of fall in the air and a few golf balls in the air, and I'm going to let you take it away with Tim, and I'll be here to try to make sure I don't press any wrong buttons.
I'm sure you'll do a good job at that. Tim, I hope you're happy with the Ryder Cup team.
It's not without its controversy. Controversy, Gary. Guys are complaining about not making the team. And, you know, going into a competition where, they've had some trouble in the past, you don't want to go in there not being a cohesive unit. And yet you've got people, crying and belly aching and why didn't I make the team? And it's going to be interesting to see how Stricker is able to pull them together.
Well, the only player who didn't make the team who could have been seriously considered was Patrick Reed. And he still might make the team because Brooks Koepka's wrist may keep him out of that competition coming up in two weekends. And if Koepka isn't able to play, that would be the perfect time for Captain Steve Stricker to put Patrick Reed in the lineup because he's had a fantastic performance chart, I think, in the last three Ryder Cups. Because the U.S. team has four rookies on the team, which is a little bit risky, but they all got there on the team by performance. But you can knock the first seven, Morikawa, Johnson, DeChambeau, Koepka or Reed, Thomas, Cantley, and Tony Finau, but the four rookies will make or break this team. Xander Schauffele, Harris English, Daniel Berger, and Scott Schauffele. What are your impressions of the European team that just finished making their roster up yesterday?
To go back to the American team, I like having the young blood in it. They just might inject it with some enthusiasm and some spirited play and produce results. For the British, they love just coming after the Americans. They're not afraid of them, They've shown that in the past, so they'll go out there, mano a mano, and go, okay, let's see what you got.
Well, look at the top of their lineup: John Rahm, the player of the year; who won the U.S. Open. Tommy Fleetwood is going to make it, win a major very soon. Rory McIlroy is in the top group. Paul Casey has experience. Lee Westwood, you know, a couple of the newcomers, Matt Fitzpatrick, Victor Hovland, Bernd Weisberger from Germany, Tyrrell Hatton from England. But look at who he picked, his three captains picks. And who was the captain? I'm drawing a blank. Who's the European captain this year, Tim? Do you remember? It's Westwood.
Yeah.
Westwood's going to play and be the captain, correct?
Yeah.
And look at who his three picks were, you know, pure experience. Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, who's had a phenomenal record in the Ryder Cup, and Shane Lowry, who won the Open Championship 2 years ago. I give the Europeans at least a 50-50 chance to win again. You know, they've been dominating this event for the last, 20 years. It should be a hell of a show out there in Whistling Straits coming up in 2 weekends.
Yeah, it's intense golf, especially the way that it's formatted. And, again, they don't buckle to any kind of pressure. They're really behind each other. And, something that sometimes you don't see with the, you know, with the Americans is they forget that this is a team thing and not an individual thing.
Well, I correct you there, Tim. It's really, you're still hitting your own golf ball. Well, actually, you're right. They're playing foursomes. They play four ball. It is a team event, and for whatever reason, the Europeans seem to thrive better at that. But I think the countdown's begun. I think the American team spent 2 days last week in Wisconsin at the site of the upcoming Ryder Cup. See if that helps them or not. But I think it's a toss-up if you ask me, and we'll see how good these guys are. Dustin Johnson's had a very quiet year. DeChambeau has been there in a lot. We'll have to see how good DeChambeau plays this first, his second, I believe, his second Ryder Cup. And, looking forward to it all.
Yeah, you know, it certainly is when they get out there and, you know, they go through the various formats and, you know, it's U.S. versus Europe and everybody else who wants to play on their team. But, It comes down, you know, as you said, you know, each man hitting his ball and playing it to the best of his ability. But I love the camaraderie, watching the camaraderie of the teammates along the sides of the green as the guys are going at it, and the way they cheer for each other.
Well, we'll see how that works this year. Although I still think it comes down to individual shot making, whether you're hitting the first or the second or the third shot during foursomes where it's alternate shot. Your partner hits one shot using just one ball, and then you hit the next shot using the same ball. We'll see how that evolves, but it should be a great show. There is some local stuff to talk about, guys, if I might.
Yes, of course.
The 38th Mass Mid Amateur just got finished up at Western Golf Club over the weekend. I don't know why they were playing on the weekend. These tournaments usually play during the weekday, but Thorny Lee down in Brockton has always touted itself as having the best group of amateur players in the state, year in and year out. And boy, the mid-amateurs certainly proved because the top three players were from Thorny Lee. Matt Parziali, the former U.S. mid-amateur champion, won the tournament with a 6-under par 138 at Weston, a very fine Donald Ross golf course. Chauvin Boatnik was second at 141, and another Thorny Lee player, Ryan Riley, was third at 142. They were the only three players in the field of like 125 who shot under par.
Wow.
They also had another player in the top 10, Jason Clary, finished tied for eighth. But we had some local players do pretty well. Frank Banner Jr. from Ferncroft finished fourth, right behind the three Thorny Lee guys, 144. Nick Macario from Bradford was tied for 10th at 148. George Delores from Tedesco shot 150. And that's about it for local guys. Not a great showing by our local players, but A few of them played okay, but boy, those Spoonie Lee guys can really play. Gotta hand it to them. Congratulations to them. We should also make note, guys, to our listeners that Stephen Delisio from Swampscott, St. John's Prep, Salem Country Club, and just finished a graduate year at Duke University, 4 years on the golf team, just tried to qualify and did not do well in shooting 2-under 215 at the pre-qualifying 54-hole tournament for the Corn Ferry Tour, which is the PGA Tour's minor league.
Mm-hmm.
That was out in Lincoln, Nebraska. He needed to shoot 210 to make it to the top 24 in ties and move on to the Corn Ferry Tour Q School, which comes up in a couple of weeks. So Stephen has to figure out what he's going to do from here. We wish him the best, but did not do well in that Corn Ferry qualifying. We should also mention briefly that we have four local players. We're going to be moving on to play in the National Club Pro Championship next spring in Austin, Texas at Barton Creek in April. They all finished high in the finish of the New England PGA Championship a couple weeks ago at Worcester and Marlboro. Dan Venezio, who had been at Myopia for many years as the top assistant, he's now the head pro at Portland Country Club up in Maine. He finished second at the New England PGA Championship. He moves on to play to Barton Creek, as do Bass Rock's Todd Scarafone, Salem's Kirk Hinnefeld, the oldest player to ever finish in the top 10, guys. He finished tied for 8th at the New England PGA Championship at the age of 65, the oldest player ever finished in the top 10. And, of course, another Gloucester boy, you know, Scarafone's at Bass Rocks, Dan Gillis, Gloucester native at he's the pro up at Nabnassig Lake in Wilmington. He also made it to the big show coming up. There'll be 312 players at that Club Pro Championship called the PNC next spring. But we'll have four guys there from the North Shore. We all wish them all the best.
Good stuff, good stuff. What's this about another PGA event coming to Salem?
Well, there's a chance, guys. Salem Country Club is in conversation with the USGA about holding another USGA championship. It would be Salem's 7th if they do work out a deal with the USGA. But they're right now, guys, working on a $3-plus million restoration project at the club, which includes a complete rebuilding of all of the 57 bunkers on the golf course. And that costs a very pretty penny.
Mm-hmm.
But historically, guys, over the last maybe 10 years, when USGA favored clubs, and there are many, have conducted these multi-million-dollar restoration projects, many of them have resulted in getting a USGA championship within a year after that restoration project is complete.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be surprised if Salem gets a third U.S. Senior Open awarded to them sometime in 2022 once this restoration project is wrapped up. And they may not be looking at this, guys, until maybe 2030, which is quite a few years
yeah.
down the road. But the
yeah.
USGA is booking their tournaments way out.
Okay.
As you guys probably have seen with their U.S. Opens and U.S. Amateurs in particular, with Pinehurst, Oakmont, and I believe Marion becoming like permanent USGA championship sites. And hopefully Salem will be in the mix. We're talking hopefully by 2030.
Love it. Love it. What else you got, Gare?
I think that covers it, guys. Most important, though, if you notice that Patrick Cantlay won the last two events, Tim, in the FedEx Cup playoffs,
yep.
winning over about $20 million. He gets him. He's going to be, I think, the other player who will be considered the player of the year with John Rahm. But if you know Patrick Cantlay's backstory, he was a great player on the West Coast as a college player. Qualified quickly for the PGA Tour, developed a serious back problem, and missed 2 years on the tour. And while he was out, his caddy and best friend, and he were walking across the street in L.A., his friend and caddy was run over and killed by a motor vehicle, by a car, and he ended up dying in Patrick Cantlay's arms. Well, Patrick's come back, of course, since that tragedy, and his back problem, and he's won, I think, four or five tour events. He won the FedEx Cup playoffs for $20 million, and right now he's the best player we have, and we have to hope he will continue that outstanding play in the Ryder Cup.
That's for sure.
Wow. Wow. All right, Gare, finally, column this week in the Salem News?
Well, we're going to hopefully get published this week. A lot of news about Salem Country Club and their restoration project and in talks with the USGA. And that column should be appearing either Wednesday or Thursday in the Salem News.
Fantastic. Unbelievable stuff again, Gary. Thank you so much. Be well, be safe, and we'll talk to you Monday.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
That is Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer. I think this far into the program, I might have actually figured this out, so I don't diss Tim again and accidentally disconnect with him. Now, I haven't heard from Mike Grenier because, Tim, you'll appreciate this. I sent the wrong email address.
No, I'm not surprised.
Okay. I was waiting for that. You know, I put these puffballs up there, and you can just swing. You don't even have to swing hard, you know. And we'll so hopefully we'll see if Gary's there, and if not, Tim and I will bring you out through the rest of the program here. You're listening to
NS. You mean Mike?
Yeah. I say that every time. Yeah. I do mean Mike. We'll be right back. Thanks, Tim. I need you here, man.
Not a problem.
All right. Hold on here. Let me just disconnect our mics. There we go.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, we are back now with Mike Grenier, another sports writer here that we try to chat with every week, generally on Celtic stuff, but other stuff as well. And this is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Bill Newell, anchoring the sports podcast with the Salem News Sports Writers in the morning. Hope you'll tune into that. Mike, welcome back. How are you?
Good. I guess it must have been a great time for the high school football seasons to open, and high school soccer and everything else, because the weather is glorious and kids are back out there playing after getting deprived of so much playing time during the pandemic, you know?
Yeah, everybody's happy about that. And the weather, you're right, it's like somebody flipped a switch and here we are, you know, from summer to fall almost instantaneously. There's a little touch of fall in the air. But, you know, Tim and I were discussing a little bit about the game yesterday, and you went?
Yeah, we did went to the Patriots game, and, you know, I found a couple of good seats earlier in the week, and I said to my wife, hey, what the heck, let's go. It's the kid's first game, meaning Mac Jones. Everyone calls him the kid. And we're glad that we went. I mean, it was a loss, but that certainly wasn't on him. I was really impressed with the way he handled himself, the professionalism that he handled himself with. You know, his accuracy in the passing game was great. You know, it's funny, but the team's mistakes kind of it kind of pushed him backwards because he would move the team forward, and then there would be a penalty or a drop pass or a fumble, and the Patriots had four of those yesterday. And he didn't seem to get, it didn't seem to faze him at all. He would just move on to the next play. So I was really impressed with his composure, among other things.
Yeah, did you see Cam in the parking lot saying that Matt didn't beat him out?
You know, it's kind of funny that like we're a week. I mean, a few quarterbacks went down yesterday, including Ryan Fitzpatrick, and no one seems to be in a hurry to. Maybe they don't have Cam's cell phone number, but it seems like he's unwanted, right?
Yeah, well, you know, that was the big story today all over the internet for all the injuries. Nobody's rushing to call him. So
yeah.
I don't. There is going to be a mad rush for Cam Newton because he basically, you know, shot himself in the foot the other day with the comments that he made.
Oh my God! Yes.
You know, I don't. They don't want me around because you know. I'll be a bad influence with the kids hitting it. And I'm thinking to myself, you're the last thing that kid is thinking about.
Right. Well, I love the term he used, Tim, right? And Rick, there's an aura about him.
yeah, sure is.
As if he's sort of like, you know, Moses parting the waters or, you know, another Larry Bird or something. There's an aura surrounding him, like Michael Jordan and LeBron. And there's no aura surrounding him because last year he couldn't even throw a pass into a receiver's hands. I thought he was just washed up.
Yeah,
every game that we saw, you know.
Can you imagine him trying to make the passes that Mac Jones made yesterday throughout the game?
Yeah.
The bullet passes, the one he dropped. It's a white candle on the sideline.
That was a
block,
pass.
Yeah.
They're looking and going, no way. I don't know what this guy is thinking.
Did you guys see the quarterback ratings and that Mac Jones came out like 30, 40 points higher than Tom Brady?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. It's interesting that you mentioned that, Rick, because I saw today where Mac Jones had the highest completion percentage for a rookie starting his first game. The highest completion percentage.
Wow.
Of any rookie in the history of the NFL.
Get out of town, seriously?
Yes, exactly. Minimum 25 throws.
Holy rollies.
It wasn't some guy who completed 8 out of 10.
Oh.
Rookie quarterback that's thrown 25 or more passes in the history of the NFL, Mac Jones has now the number one highest percentage as a starter, is in his first start. Now, naturally lost the game, he'd like to take that back. But Tom Brady, in his first start, well, let's put it this way. He didn't have to do much because they beat the Colts 44-13
in
his first start ever on September 30th, 2001. So he was like 13 for 23 for 168 yards, no touchdowns. But, I mean, the game was out of hand. The Patriots, you know, just had it well in hand, and he wasn't asked to do much. Whereas yesterday, Mac Jones, it was a close game, and he was asked to do an awful lot in terms of responsibilities. I just love the way he played. You know, when you go see one of your favorite teams play and they lose, you kind of walk away. You know, we've walked away from the Boston Garden or, you know, after a Bruins loss or Fenway Park or, you know, after a Celtics loss or after a Red Sox loss, and you say, they should have won that game. Well, this one here yesterday should have won, but there was a lot of promise in Mac Jones and his future here.
Two things I liked, I don't think you probably saw it in the stands,
yep.
was after the touchdown pass, the receiver
yes.
tried to hand him the ball, and he wouldn't take it.
Yep.
And afterwards,
yep.
they asked him about it, and he said, it's just one touchdown pass. We didn't win anything.
That's right.
And that was the second thing that I like. He said, you know, it was nice, but we didn't win, so we got to do better. It's the we stuff again, and I love it.
Yeah, and I know, Rick, I know you speak about that a lot, and I agree with you. And doesn't that show an awful lot of maturity for a 23-year-old guy who being asked to carry the load to do that? In other words, and say, okay, yeah, that was good to get a touchdown pass, but no, we did not win,
yep.
and we have 16 more weeks to go, and a lot more to be done if we're going to be a playoff contender and all that. And, you know, the last loss yesterday in terms of the, quote, standings, even though it's really wasn't that bad because the mighty Buffalo Bills, the preseason reports, I didn't think the Buffalo was going to lose any time in the next 5 or 10 years. You know?
That's right.
And they lost yesterday to a Steelers team that's considered far inferior. So the Patriots are kind of right there. I mean, the Dolphins, I think, are going to be good. And the Jets, well, we kind of know that they never seem to be in the contention for anything. And of course, the Patriots go down to MetLife Stadium this coming Sunday, to play the Jets and their rookie quarterback, Zach Wilson. If you notice yesterday, too, Trevor Lawrence, the number one pick overall, threw three interceptions. Zach Wilson threw an interception, and he couldn't lead his team to a win. The rookie quarterbacks, all of whom have good talent, Mac Jones had the most solid game.
That's interesting.
Well, you know, there was a stat online that some really great quarterbacks also threw three interceptions in their first game.
Yeah.
So Lawrence is in pretty outstanding company. But again, he's got Jacksonville in front of him. So,
that's true. Yeah, the offensive line isn't the best over there.
Yeah. Now, I'm wondering what the odds are going to be, how long Urban Meyer is going to last as the Jacksonville head coach this year.
Good question. I don't know what kind of guarantee he's got in his contract, so they're probably stuck with him for a while. But it seems like an odd marriage, Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, you know, Trevor Lawrence is caught in the middle of it. You know, he's got a strong arm. He showed yesterday some highlights that I saw. But he did throw three interceptions. A couple of them were really bad throws where he was on the run, and he made really bad decisions. And we didn't see Mac Jones do that yesterday. That's another thing, right, Rick? If you notice, Mac Jones in the pocket, when he was feeling the pressure, he was able to step up.
Yes, except for the first play, yeah. Yep.
Right,
yep.
Exactly. He was able to step up and make the throws.
Yep.
He kept his poise. He released the ball at the last second.
The other thing I like, Mike, you know, late in Brady's career with the Patriots, he would really get mad at his receivers.
Right.
This kid, there was another drop ball. The guy, and it would have been a big game. Guy came back to the huddle.
Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, it was just, let's go, next play. Here we go, don't worry about it.
Right. Right.
That's cool.
He kind of knows his place in the pecking order, I think.
And he's
a rookie, and he knows he's going to make rookie mistakes, and
yep.
He's not going to get on teammates' case for making mistakes. And that was another thing. I just think he showed an awful lot of maturity. I like what I saw. And when he had to put zip on the ball, he put zip on the ball. There was one 25-yarder, I think, he threw to Aguilar, who had a very good game yesterday.
Hey, how about the tight ends? They look good, too.
Hunter Henry, I was waiting for him. He didn't really get his first target until late in the third quarter, I believe, and he had three catches for 35, 36 yards. I love that guy. I loved him when he was with the Chargers. He's going to be a very vital part of their offense. It's just he wasn't used much yesterday, and Jonnu Smith certainly has ability, too. So, you know, it shows some promise, even though they lost. You hate to see them lose. You think about it, Mac Jones put him in a position to win with less than 4 minutes left in the game.
Yep, he did.
They're inside. They're on the 11-yard line. A couple of running plays. Run some clock. Kick the field. You know, try to knock it into the end zone, but you don't want to take any unnecessary chance. If you don't knock it into the end zone, you get a chip shot field goal, put you ahead by a couple of points, and then you put it on the defense to win the game, to close it out for you. But obviously, you know, Damian Harris put the ball down on the floor, you know, and it was the fourth. You know, he recovered two of their four fumbles, and then Stevenson, the rookie, had one that was lost to the Dolphins, and Damian Harris lost one that was at the most critical time of the game.
All right, boys, I'm going to we got a few minutes left. We're going to go a little long because I'm going to be editing out all the dead air I put on here tonight. I want to switch gears and talk coaching, if I could, and let you two guys bat it around if you want to. But what is the significance to the rest of the sports world of Bill Russell's being named to the Hall of Fame again, this time as a coach? Because we've all talked about, you know, him as an athlete, which is, you just can't give more superlatives than what he has earned. What about the significance of his going in, along with Paul Pierce, but his going into the Hall of Fame again as a coach? And I guess this time he actually did show up for the ceremony?
Right, yes he did, and of course he wore the mask and he was very careful. I think it's a belated honor. I think it should have happened before this, Tim. I don't know how you feel about that. But I mean, he didn't coach for a long time with the Celtics. You know, he eventually coached with Seattle again in the mid-70s and all that, and Sacramento for a very brief and non-productive period. However, with the Celtics, you know, he became, what, the first black coach. And then he won two titles in 3 years, and they weren't with a team that was like, still growing into a championship caliber team. It was with an aging team where he you know, had to, you know, sort of had to nurture the health of not only himself, but guys like Sam Jones and other guys who were towards the end of their careers. And he did that wonderfully well. And the other thing, everything I've read about Bill Russell as a coach, Tim, is the fact that he let his players have a lot of input into strategy and into, you know, drawing up plays. I know in reading about the 1969 team most recently, that one of the key players of the game when the Celtics were down 2-1 was in the huddle. Well, they had discussed it actually previously. They had practiced it a few times. But it was actually a play that Larry Siegfried and John Havlicek had used at Ohio State. And they found the perfect time to use it with Sam Jones late in the game. And he hit an off-balance ball, crawled over the rim, and the Celtics won by a point to even the series at 2-2. That's how close they came to being down 3-1, and they probably would have lost that series. But Bill Russell allowed that. My point is this. Bill Russell allowed that input by Larry Siegfried and John Havlicek to implement a play that had been used at Ohio State.
I think it's one thing that talks to the greatness of the man. You know, he wasn't afraid to let others in on what they were going to do. He wasn't, you know, locked into, well, I'm Bill Russell, and I'm going to tell you what to do, and you'll do it my way, and, you know, we'll win. No. You know, he looked at it and said, that's a plan that we can win with. So let's do it, because they're not going to be thinking about us using an old Ohio State play.
Right, exactly.
So let's build it. Let's do it differently. You know, let's break the mold.
Yeah.
And that was the great thing about Bill Russell.
And I think Russell actually
break the mold.
And I think, Tim and Rick, I think Russell actually admitted that over the weekend, that he wasn't afraid to let his teammates have input into plays. And actually, I read a quote from Larry Siegfried, who, of course, was, you know, a key player off the bench and sometimes starting for that team, that Russell often played 48 minutes a game back then, and therefore, when there was a timeout, Russell wasn't the one to collect his thoughts and say, we're going to do this, this, and this. He had to collect his breath, not his thoughts. Therefore, he allowed Siegfried, Havlicek, Sam Jones to say, okay, here's what we got to do the next 4 or 5 minutes. And because he actually needed that timeout time to just draw some breath to be able to go for the next 8 or 9 minutes until the next timeout. So I think Russell, yeah, he was a hands-on coach in practice and in games. However, there were certain key times even where he let his teammates do the talking and make the plans, you know, because Russell could influence the game when he got back out on the floor, but he was open-minded enough to allow his teammates to have some input.
And, you know, the thing about it is that the guys who made up those teams,
yes,
had all been through the process before. They had
That's
been
correct.
Through the pressure before. They knew what they had to do. They knew how to attack. They knew how to exploit, you know. And all Bill had to do was sit back and go, okay, let's go do this. And everybody knew what he was talking about.
Right. And
today with Russell and Johnny Rose, and they would run the weave, and you know they'd be running in circles and almost, you know, and Johnny Moses going button, who's got the button? Because nobody knew, because the ball was moving around so quickly at the foul line, and everybody moving in a synchronized motion, that all of a sudden the ball was being dumped off. There's a layup, thank you very much. You know, and off they went. And that was the beauty of that team. You know, they weren't worried about the guy being the guy that got the button, because when the time came, you would have an opportunity to make the shot, or you would set somebody up to make the shot.
Yep. And you know what? I'll say this, too, as a practical example, Tim and Rick. His intuition about the game was second to none. I kind of like compare Brady to him, probably the smartest player in his sport ever to play the game. In other words, Bill Russell in basketball, Tom Brady in football. And I'll give you a perfect example. In a famous playoff series against the Philadelphia Warriors /who became the 76ers. Russell talked Wayne Embry out of retirement into coming. Wayne Embry was ready for a desk job. He wasn't making enough money in basketball, and he was out of shape and overweight and all that. And Russell talked him into coming back for situational basketball in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And in one particular instance against Philly, Rick, and I know you have a lot of Philadelphia ties, Chet Walker was going crazy. He was having a great game against the Celtics, and Will Chamberlain wasn't doing anything.
Right. I read
now,
that. Yep. Yep.
Now we come to the point where Russell, during a timeout, says to Wayne Embry, look, at, I want you to play Wilt.
Chamberlain,
I'm going to
yeah.
take Chet Walker.
Yeah.
Yep. So now, you know, they switch defensive assignments. Russell takes the hot-scoring Chet Walker and basically took him out of the game. And Wayne Embry was still strong and physical enough to keep Will Chamberlain from going crazy. And the Celtics won a big playoff game because of that.
That's pure genius. That's genius. That really is.
You know, I mean, just that intuition, the knowledge, the institutional knowledge that he carried about the game, his instinct for the game. And then, you know, 20, 30 years later, you know, Tom Brady kind of developed that same sense of intuition and knowing situations that has gone unmatched in the NFL.
As I've said before, I remember reading that Russell has told players, "I know what you're going to do before you do." He has told his opponents that, and you know, it's like when Larry Bird walks into the room and says, "Okay,
right.
Which one of y'all is going to finish second in the 3-point contest?"
Right.
It's just
right.
It's not arrogance. It's just this is how we do it. This is how I do it. Let me ask you a quick question, and this will be my last question. But Tim, you can pick it up. The influence of Red Auerbach, we're aware with Russell as a professional athlete, as a player, as a human being, and the civil rights movement and so on. But what is the influence, do you think, Mike? And I don't know if you ever read anything about this, about Red's coaching style with on Russell as a coach. And I ask that because what about the guys who have become coaches who John Wooden coached? You know, how much of an influence do these absolute icons have on players or former players when they become coaches? Because you always read about, well, I took a little bit of this, I took a little bit of that. But someone like Wooten or Auerbach, I would think you'd take, you don't want to be those guys, but you must learn so much that you could implement as a coach.
Well, right. And I think Russell, basically, he loved Auerbach's style of coaching and his play calling to the point where he kept the same, supposedly the Celtics had just six plays
yep.
and had variations on those plays. And Russell really didn't deviate from that except to maybe to use the Ohio State play in the 1969 playoffs. And I think you talk about influence. Russell treated individuals to fit certain situations. In other words, when Auerbach was coaching Russell, and Russell wouldn't get back on offense. In other words, he would make a rebound. We've seen films of that. Russell would get a rebound, and then he wouldn't go down on the fast break. It would be Havlicek and Tommy Heinsohn and the rest of the guys. And people used to get upset. Well, why isn't Russell going down? Well, because Auerbach knew that Russell was going to have to play 48 minutes, and he would pull down 28 rebounds. And if he was going to take a break, it was going to be for 18 seconds or 10 seconds on offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think Auerbach gave Russell a lot of latitude, and I think in return, when Russell was coaching, he gave latitude to certain players. So I think he was I don't want to call him a copycat, because certainly Russell had a strong mind of his own, but I think his basic philosophy was drawn quite a bit from Red Auerbach.
Interesting.
You know, I wonder if he ever pulled the maneuver or the stunt that Red pulled with him. Did Bill ever pull it on any of his players when Red grabbed him and said, okay, I'm going to yell at you today.
yeah.
And I don't mean a thing.
Right.
But let me yell.
Yep.
And so that everybody thinks, oh, that you're nothing special, that you can be yelled at too.
Yep. Yeah, well, you know what? Russell was famously said, that's a great point, Tim, and I think Celtics fans of a certain age would know this, that Russell was a very sensitive, still is a sensitive individual, and Red Auerbach made it a point not to yell at him, where he would yell at, and I've talked to Tommy Heinsohn about this, because when Heinsohn was playing, he was Auerbach's whipping boy, and even if he was playing well, like what you said, Tim, he could take him aside during a timeout and holler at him and maybe tell Heinsohn beforehand, I'm doing this for effect. You know, in other words, like, that he knew that Heinsohn had the thick skin and could take the screaming and the yelling, whereas Bill Russell, you know, was much more sensitive to criticism. So Auerbach would make his point, but he would use Heinsohn as the whipping boy, you know. So that's obviously right there, a philosophical way that was, you know, Auerbach's philosophy about coaching. And, you know, yeah. And Heinsohn, I saw firsthand, he adopted some of that philosophy. He would not really criticize JoJo White that much. I knew JoJo very well. His kids went to Massanoma Regional and played sports there. JoJo was a sensitive individual. He didn't yell at JoJo, but he could yell at, like, Paul Silas, and he could yell. He could yell at Cowens, because Cowens would come back and try to eat somebody's head. I mean, so he knew that Cowens could take the heat. You know, whereas JoJo White could not. JoJo would sulk and be a little bit sullen if he was criticized by Tommy Heinsohn. Whereas Cowens could take. He had a thick skin. He could take. It would just roll off his back. He'd go out and play even harder after a timeout.
Yeah.
All right, guys. This has been awesome once again. Mike, we'll do it again next Monday.
That sounds great, and let's hope at that point that Mac Jones has a win.
Amen to that. He should. Let's hope so, man. All right, Mike, thank you.
Take care, guys.
Talk to you later, Mike.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, Mike.
That is Mike Grenier, who is a sports writer and a sports historian in his own right. And, Tim, final thoughts?
Let's work on ball control.
Let's work on ball control, and I'll work on my technical.
Hold that ball.
Yeah, and I think, final thought on that, what I was thinking, I listened to a little bit of Boston radio today, and they were comparing this opening game to the game last year where everybody got excited. The Patriots looked good early on, and then Cam couldn't close it out at the end. He made the fumble, and that this looks like deja vu. And I think the difference that I'm gleaning out of this is that it's the complete opposite of that. This was a team failure in a big way because so many guys did so many things wrong, except the QB. He made a couple of you know, plays that probably he would want back, especially that first one that he threw into the ground there and got blindsided. But you know what I'm saying, Tim? This was so many other guys who didn't do their job, whereas last year it was Cam, the one guy, who didn't do his job. Does that analysis sound right?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, offensive line, too many penalties. You know, Mac recognizing the heat, sliding up, setting his feet, stepping into the throws, making good downfield decisions. You know, he overcame a lot of negatives from the team around him. There are only 10 incompletes. But, I mean, how many of those were drops that people should have had, you know, that would have extended the drives and maybe put them in the end zone? So you don't want to overly praise the kid, but, my God, he had a hell of a game.
Well, I wasn't overpraising him. I'm just saying it was this was, to me, it was a team collapse, you know, whereas last year I think it was just one guy who didn't play well. And so this – and I don't know which is more concerning, to tell you the truth. You know, they didn't look crisp at all. And as you said, too many penalties, too many bad plays. Hated seeing Trent Brown go down so early. That was awful.
Yeah, they said that he's fine, though. He'll be
good
next week.
Good.
Good.
All right. Well, I hope you're fine and back next week as well, and that we can do this, if not in studio next week, then the week after.
All righty. I'll try.
You got to, because you see what a disaster it is when you're not here. All right, Tim. Thank you so much, man. All right, be well.
Hey.
Good night. All right, that is Tim Kearns, our MSO super analyst, and can't wait to get him back in the broadcast booth up in the press boxes. So to have his voice back up there, Paul Ingram. I'm not sure if Paul will be with me on Friday night or not. We're not sure yet at this time. However, we are making plans. It hasn't been written in cement yet, but we're making plans to broadcast from Manning Field on Friday evening. Game time is at 6 p.m. Marblehead against Lynn Classical. And really looking forward to that if we can get over there. I haven't been to Classical because Bill and Tim did the games at Manning Field for the last several years. We talked with Rich Avery, who is the community facilities director in Lynn, and he's given us the thumbs up. We can get over there. We got a spot reserved, and I'm just looking forward to it. Manning Field, great, great place to broadcast from. Of course, we've got calls out to both coaches, to Coach Brian Vaughn, Lynn Classical, and also to Coach Jim Rudloff over at Marblehead. So stay tuned. Check out the website. We'll give you details on that as time permits, and I will have the complete interview. In fact, I believe it's up there already, the complete interview with Ryan Nolan from Danvers High School Football. I had to cut that out to talk with Jeff Hutton, but that is up on the website. We'll also be talking more tomorrow with other people, and we'll have an interview with Jamie Caponigro of Endicott College Soccer. And please do not forget the podcast, the Salem News Sports Podcast tomorrow, hosted by Bill Newell. Nick Kukuru also on board. It's the Salem News Sports Writers, Phil Stacey, Matt Williams, and Nick Giannino, plus Nick, and they will have their usual weekly information for you. Again, that'll be posted probably around 8 a.m. Okay, this is it. I appreciate it. Thank you for being with us. Coach Goodhue, great to see you the other night at the field, and hope to see you at the next game as well. Thank you so much, Ben. You've been such a great supporter for so long. I appreciate it. All right, be well, everyone. Thank you very much. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com.